All right. Welcome to Freethinker Radio. I'm Mike. I'm here with Derek down in Mexico. Glad to be here for another week. How are you, Derek?
Hey, man, I'm chilling. I'm free. I'm not quarantined. I'm not locked in my home or being fined for going outside like some people on this planet. So I'm doing pretty good.
That's what's up. That's what's up. All right, man, let's just get into it. You know, we got another week of interesting, somewhat anti-authoritarian news to get into. We're going to have music. You just heard a little intro from Total Chaos. There you go. Yep. And we're stoked about that. Thanks everybody who thumbs up and joins in the conversation. We're on a number of platforms. I know we're on DLive, Float, and Facebook.
Yep.
All right. So let's get into some Houston stuff. If you're not in Houston, just think of this as like a what do you call it? What goes on around the country? It might be going on in your town. So
it probably is.
Yeah, it probably is. And if you've paid attention to this show for any time, you know, over the last 2 years, you know, we've reported about the Tuttles, Regina Nichols, and their dog Star, who were just randomly killed one day by Houston police while being in their home. Yes, that's right. You can dig deeper into that. But it turns out that along with that story, we uncovered another story about Otis Mallett, who was sent to jail by basically Gerald Goines, the same officer who spearheaded the drug raid that the failed drug raid, whatever you want to call it, the false drug raid that killed, you know, two people and their dog. So it does turn out that Otis Mallett is going to sue Houston for that lethally corrupt cop who sent him to prison. And I was going to say, you know, we made it to national news again, because here we are in another national magazine. Houston's getting used to it. But yeah, here we are in Reason Magazine, where they're speaking about it, and they're speaking in depth about the problem with it. And they also get into that without the scrutiny of the 2019 Tuttle murder, this may have not even gotten to light. So turns out that he was jailed and has been in jail for a long time based on a fictional drug purchase. And he filed his suit in federal court last week. So, you know, there's a lot of resources here that are going into, you know, just having to deal with what Goines has done and what corrupt cops have done. And so I think maybe with this defund the police, maybe what we need to talk about is, you know, if nothing else, what's the proper role of police? When do they get to do these things? If nothing else, we began to ask what prompted a no-knock raid, you know, things that people didn't typically ask. So we did talk a little bit about this historically, so I didn't want to go too far into it. But it turns out that Goines' testimony was the only evidence that was given against Otis and Stephen Mallett, that the two brothers that were charged with you know, selling crack cocaine. And it turns out a drug sniffing dog did not alert to the truck where Mallett allegedly has stashed his can of crack. Sounds like Goines might have had the crack. I think they found a lot of different drugs in Goines' car as well during the Tuttle raid. So
some real corrupt cop stuff, man.
You know, and you know what we keep finding out each time is that it's a rogue officer. Now, in the Tuttle raid, more than one was found, because it's like hard to believe that one guy could orchestrate such murder and mayhem without being something like the chief of police, right? But that's what the first story typically is, and it's only through digging deeper, like in the Tuttles, that they discover that there's more. It does turn out that the Mallett should be declared innocent, is what the Harris County District Judge Ramona Franklin said. During his appeals, they affirmed that finding, quote, no credible evidence existed that inculpated the defendant. And the defendant was actually innocent of the crime for which he was sentenced. Of course, he then received over $250,000 in state compensation for his wrongful conviction. It turns out another Harris County judge, Kelly Johnson, reached the same conclusion about Stephen Mallett. It's kind of, look, you're bogging down the court systems. You bog down the police station, arresting someone who wasn't a criminal, making jailers and all that deal with this person two people who weren't criminals at all, if not more, and instead of pursuing and chasing actual criminals. I sometimes wonder if Gerald Goines just thought it was easier to put some crack on some poor, you know, poor individual, and they wouldn't have anybody to defend them, and it'd be his word as an officer who had so many arrests already for crack that, you know, this person just has to be guilty too.
Yeah, so, it's unfortunate. I'm glad that the Tuttle case, though, is helping other people like this man, Otis Mallett, and hopefully more cases could come out because they're supposed to be reviewing all of his history of cases, right? Everything that he's pretty much touched and been involved with now that we know his corruption. And to those who might not know the background, just one element that you should be aware of is this involved what are known as no-knock raids. And this became a big thing not only in Houston, but in other parts of the country after Breonna Taylor was killed from a no-knock raid as well. I know Rand Paul has put forward bills trying to ban no-knock raids. I think he did in Kentucky. But I put forth the question, if for anybody who's listening, do you think police should be allowed to perform no-knock raids as well? And you know, of course, that's just one element of it. There's also a whole other layer of corruption with the Tuttles. But,
there was one other paragraph here that's pretty quick that I think it's probably worth mentioning before we move on too far. It says the fraudulent raid that killed Tuttle and Nicholas did not dim Art Acevedo, that was the former police chief who's now decamped for Miami. It did not dim Acevedo's enthusiasm for the war on drugs. He repeatedly praised the officers involved in that operation, and there's links to all these different news sources where he's praising them, including Goins as, quote, heroes, while tarring their victims as dangerous drug dealers. So he's claiming to know things he doesn't know, right? And claiming that neighbors were grateful that his officers had eliminated a locally notorious drug house. See, I mean, it's really a good article because it goes beyond just the surface of what's happened. It gets into how the narrative was spoken during the time. And we saw it. We were talking about it on the radio the day after it. Even after it became clear that the operation was built on lies from start to finish, Acevedo concluded that the problem was just a few bad apples, as opposed to a rotten barrel built by drug prohibition and supervisory negligence. It turns out, and this is what Reason says, now he is Miami's problem. Kind of, I guess, you know, it's embarrassing in front of the nation.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's just another, like I said, another crazy example to see whether we're talking about the no-knock raid example, we're talking about corrupt cops, we're talking about Acevedo definitely lied, and I've confronted him on this in Houston. He changed his story several times about what time he arrived and how much information he knew, and like you said, calling them heroes and talking down on the Tuttles, and you know, they've still never apologized for that. It's definitely an unnerving situation. Micah, I'm going to play a real quick song real quick, just for a quick 30-second break, and we'll be right back. We're going to play Stupid Idiot Fascist Punk. Stay tuned. This is Freethinker Radio.
Everyone should be like me. Go. Everyone should be like me. Everyone should be like me. Everyone should be like me. Everyone should be like me.
And we're back. Just wanted to throw that quick music break in there. You know, we don't have 2 hours or even really an hour and a half like we used to, Micah, so we sometimes don't get to all the music. So if we can get a quick song in there, then we might as well do it.
And I think it's important to play the music because a lot of music, you know, it touches on things besides the political stuff we're talking, but often you and I will choose music that we think does speak to it of diverse genres. And look, that little short, fast song that repeated itself quite a bit kind of does speak to what's going on with the whole collectivism that's just permeating our culture. So, you know, we have to remember that artists, just like politicians and all this stuff, are people and they have ways of expressing themselves. So I think it's an important facet of the show, and I'm thankful for you for playing it. I'm thankful for, what is it, Stupid Idiot, for creating it.
Yep, and in case you didn't catch those lyrics, that is, everyone should be like me. I think they should think like me, just over and over. Fascist punk. So, all right, well, before we get into some COVID news, we got about 7 or 8 COVID stories. We're going to start with some Texas-related ones that I think many of you are paying attention to, whether or not you live in Houston or Texas at all, because Texas and Florida are two of the states that have been pushing back against the federal government the most when it comes to local vaccine and COVID kind of lockdown mandates. We're going to talk about that in just a second. But the first thing I want to share briefly is just another throwing it out there for your enjoyment and potential involvement. A friend passed this to me recently, d-day.us. someone out there is kind of trying to create a movement, and they're calling it hashtag D-Day US. And I think the idea is that this could be international, but this is just sort of the start for maybe people who want to be involved in the US. US Demonstration Day, your city, September 18th or 19th. We need you to host a demonstration. And they kind of go into some of the things, like, here's some things. It says, can we all agree on medical freedom, freedom of information? They give you some options to organize yourself. And I like this thing that they put here in the who and the what, just to set a little bit of background. Who are we? Let's answer that by describing who we're not. We're not represented or definable by one label. We're not Antifa, QAnon, anti-vaxxers, 9/11 truthers, Pizzagaters, extremists, or any other arbitrary conflation from the mainstream media. No, we are simply fed up Americans from all walks of life, race, gender, religion, career, social status, and we are unified around the core agreement that it's time to take society's problems head on at the local level. What do we want? We want this demonstration to be a representation that no matter how divided the mainstream media, government, corporations, and other entities think we are, we aren't. We want those entities who wish to remove unalienable rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness to know that we are more united than ever. We want nonviolent solutions. We will all be there, and we will all be free. So it's just another thing. If you're looking for connect with people, I know a lot of people are looking for hope and looking for some optimism, looking to get involved and saying, what the heck is going on with the U.S.? Why are other countries protesting, as we're going to show in just a bit? And why are things not seeming to happen in the U.S.? If you want to be involved in that, d-day.us. I'll put the link in the places we're streaming. But what do you think about that, Micah?
I think it's pretty good to get out and talk to people and to care about things like rights. You know, I think people don't think about them. You know, they don't talk about them on their abstract. So they think they don't exist. And, you know, they're easily talked away by people, especially maybe people with a leaning towards altruism, because, you know, if it appears good in one light, that seems to be all the argument they need. And they push hard that way. So I don't know. It was interesting to hear people talk about it. And it does sort of sound like a bit of finding yourself and a little bit of self-discovery, even though it sits here and defines we're not this, we're not that, you know, different things that labels. It also says what they're going to get into. And it doesn't sound like they already know it all, but they want to have this conversation and don't want to lose certain things that they do think are valuable. And, you know, meanwhile, you know, what else are you going to do? What else are you going to do? You know, you see people voting, and what good's that? You know, and you see people, you know, writing and doing radio shows and all that. And that's good too. But getting out on the streets is pretty important, because if you don't, or if people with peaceful, I saw peace all over that. If people that can peacefully express their ideas to people that look different than them, that maybe wear badges and guns, in fact, and, you know, that maybe wear a suit or maybe have long hair or whatever it is that's different. And, you know, they're out on the street and this is a stranger and they're able to have a conversation. And even if the person, maybe this person has a minority view and believes in rights or something, you know, and has to talk to someone who's like, what? I remember one time I was talking to someone at the airport about it. And the next thing you know, they said we did that. They were trying to accuse us of saying arm all Americans. And I'm like, whoa, I don't know about that one yet. But, you know, so I think the main thing is it's important, because when you do this, you see how broad the perspective of the general public is at times. And you're also able to influence it, believe it or not. And in that process, you meet people that you thought were different and may have a lot of differences with you, and that brings different fruit than you might have seen before to the same struggle, because maybe you both agree with rights, but you don't believe that how they're defined or that they're limited to these rights or et cetera. So sorry to be a little long on that, but I think that just like the music is this lived important thing of, you know, being alive and caring about what's going on in the world. It's easy to just be a Facebook warrior or whatever and just yell at people. You know, I've seen people from both sides hoping for damage to individuals, and it's just sad to see that. So this seems like a step in the other direction.
Yep, check that out, guys, d-day.us. All right, let's go ahead. We're going to continue. We're diving in first with Texas and Houston news. We're going to get into some COVID things you got to hear about in case you haven't heard, because you might not be hearing about them in the mainstream. So you might have heard that Texas and the state of Texas, Governor Greg Abbott, and cities like Houston, San Antonio, Austin have been kind of having a back and forth, not only in words, but in the courtroom, where now there is back and forth after Abbott said that they couldn't mandate vaccines You can't mandate masks in schools. And there's lawsuits from Harris County, where Houston's at, from the city, and other cities joining in. Well, now today, Governor Abbott of Texas makes more news, saying he's banning mandates on COVID-19 vaccines, regardless of whether they have full FDA approval. And I pointed this out when he did his first executive order, that the executive order he originally issued did stipulate that it only said under emergency use authorization. And so I was saying, look, when they pass, when the FDA does this approval, which they did this week, expect that they might go ahead and, you know, see that as kind of a loophole. But instead, yesterday, or just today on Wednesday, he announced an executive order banning COVID-19 vaccine mandates, regardless of a vaccine status with the U.S. FDA. He said he was adding the issue to the agenda for the current special session of the Texas legislature. His latest order is simple, saying, quote, no governmental entity can compel any individual to receive a COVID-19 vaccine. The order preserves exceptions for places like nursing homes and state-supported living centers. I don't know why they should have that. At the same time, Abbott asked lawmakers to consider legislation addressing whether state or local governments could issue vaccine mandates, and if so, which exemptions should apply. So, look, they're preparing for this to happen on a local level. Like, I see this fully, that if it's Mayor Turner in power, when the opportunity comes, he's probably going to take it, or maybe the next guy will. But this is what it seems like Greg Abbott is appearing to try to fight for people on the local level. He said in a statement, quote, vaccine requirements and exemptions have historically been determined by the legislature, and their involvement is particularly important to avoid a patchwork of vaccine mandates across Texas. So that's what they always say, is like, oh, well, if we don't have a kind of uniform centralized system across the country, well, then you're going to have a patchwork of laws, or you're going to have this and that. So we need to have one body, one, you know, maybe why don't we just make an international body, because we have a patchwork of countries. And so, again, Texas is currently in a second special session, and they have 17 items on their agenda. Abbott's last order regarding vaccine requirements, which was issued on July 29th, is the one that I was talking about, that said that no governmental entity could compel anyone to receive a vaccine administered under emergency use authorization. So, yeah, he expanded that a little bit further, Micah. But then one other note before we get your thoughts on it is Lena Hidalgo, the county commissioner here in Houston area, is responding. You got Texas Democrats speaking their minds after he did this. So we got former San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro saying, this is about Abbott playing political games with the deadly virus to placate his extreme right-wing base. Reporters with the Texas Tribune said that they are, San Antonio School District told the Texas Tribune that they are still planning on issuing vaccine mandates for employees. And that's what's been interesting about this, Micah. Remember last week, Hidalgo said that this was necessary civil disobedience to push against the governor, and they're really framing it like, you know, they're standing up for what's right. And you got Gene Wu for Texas, once again, given the easy choice between a virus that has already killed 55,000 Texans and Texans, Governor Abbott unflinchingly sides with the virus, they say. Now they're saying he's waging a war on the Texas legislature. Now he's doing a battle royale with Texas counties and schools and teachers with these mask mandates and vaccine mandates. So there's people who are not happy about this, but this article from the Chronicle is probably ignoring a lot of Texans who I would imagine are very happy about this. But yeah, what do you think about that, Micah?
Well, as far as the Chronicle ignoring facts, I'm sorry, did I say that? But yeah, I do think that's something, you know, how it's written. You know, it does sound like they're trying to paint the governor in a, you know, chaotic light, you know, like he's fencing windmills and stuff. You know, like, but I don't know, you know, I think he's doubled down on it. I'd like to believe that there's a reason behind it. And, you know, I keep hearing this divide, you know, like it's somehow just the right that doesn't want to be, you know, that thinks it's their body, you know? So I'm very confused by the rhetoric with this whole COVID thing, because all of a sudden, you know, thinking you have rights over your body is suddenly a right-wing thing. You know, it's like the people that are so adamant on it, and I don't care if they want to get vaccinated, fine, right? but the people who are super adamant on it do seem to think it's, you know, your body, but their rules. And I don't understand that. So this whole thing is also, and we see it, and it's not just Republicans, it's not just Democrats, it's, you know, all of these. Not every member, but all of these parties, all of these groups, all of these collectives, they believe in the rule of law, and they quote, justice separate from law. You know what I mean? Like, they pretend to believe in morality and justice and this stuff until it's in the way, you know? And so, you know, we see people, you know, lying to the UN. We see people lying all over the place. You know, we see people saying, you know, civil disobedience, but you better do what we say when we're the authorities. So,
yeah, it's been interesting to see people who in the past might have typically kind of had concerns or questions or at least skepticism towards corporations taking such a large role in public health policy, global health policy, sort of sit back and like, stop being critical of them. They're saving the, you know, just I've been having a lot of that back and forth of Twitter, wasting my time with people who just there's for one, that's not a place to have a healthy discussion. For two, like it's just the same thing, man. And we've been doing this now 10 years and activism for me for 11 years, enough time to see that, hey, a lot of people don't really want to hear your arguments. They just want to tell you you're wrong and pretend like they hear you, but they're not really going to listen. Oh, hey, if you say, hey, read this thing that I'm sharing with you, watch this video I put together. Here's, it's like a homework report I did, right? Here's my book report. Please check this out and read on this topic I'm trying to inform you about. I'm not going to read that trash, but you're wrong. You know, it's just like the level of discussion sometimes is, and it's coming from often from these same people though who consider themselves extremely intellectual, extremely well-informed. They trust the science, they, you know, the vaccines, et cetera, you know, and it's just an odd thing. I don't want to get sucked into that, but I do hope that the dialogue can be furthered in this, because it seems like the way it's going to go, the city of Houston and the county is going to sue the state, and that's going to play out. It might make its way up to Supreme Court, and then I guess we'll see, you know, where that goes. But it's interesting because a lot of people want to move to Texas or Florida right now because they see it as a more free place, and this is the battle that's playing out.
Wash our hands, everybody. Wash our hands. Let's just get ahead of this thing to where when this stuff gets to the Supreme Court, it seems like so last, like, generation or something, you know? Like, you know, who would go back to slavery now, at least in the honest sense, you know?
Yeah. So, well, let's go ahead and continue on. I got a couple more COVID stories that Micah, this one talking about things from we thought we left in the past. Like, I don't even know what you would call this, but Eatonville High School requiring tracking monitors in practice for some athletes. Why? Ankle monitors. Yes, these are ankle monitors. Why? Why are you saying we're talking about Eatonville High School? This is in what state did I find this? I can't even recall. We'll see if the article tells us. Eatonville High School is requiring some student athletes and coaches to wear tracking monitors during practice. The monitors are intended to be a way to contact trace in the event of a positive COVID-19 case to measure players' proximity to others during practice and how long they were near them. In the event there's a positive case, coaches and administrators will have instant data on which players would potentially need to quarantine. These are monitors are being used for high contact and moderate indoor sports, including volleyball, basketball, wrestling, football, soccer, and others. And then the school district said in a statement that all participants of the sports are wearing the monitors regardless of vaccination status. And they go into where the funding came from. But I don't know, man. And like,
it's Washington State.
Washington State. Okay. I was going to say there's some mountains back there. What do you think about that, though? I mean, could it be more of a prison at this point?
Hey, it's for the good of all. You know, I don't know where you find that, you know, good of all, but it is. No, well, I think it's absurd. Why can't people just be told? Oh, they'll tell you because people aren't responsible. Therefore, we have to have devices that are created and monitored by people to monitor people because people can't be trusted to not play a sport if they're sick.
Well, let me show you one more, Micah, to add to this while we're on the topic of ankle monitors, because this one clearly shows an ankle monitor. You guys might remember this. This was all the way. Let's go back to March 31st, 2020.
Who wants to lug that around? That's not even a piece you can use. That's just a...
But let me just tell you why I'm bringing this in. The last one was a student who... Students are being asked to wear ankle monitors to participate in sports. That's just one use of it. That was to, you know, contact trace or whatever. This one is when a COVID patient, an alleged COVID patient, was put on house arrest for refusing a stay-at-home order. This is in Louisville, Kentucky, in March 31st, 2020. Barely a month and a half into this thing, and they were already going for things like this. So this person allegedly tested positive when they were out getting ready to travel, and the doctors said, like, hey, you're supposed to, you know, quarantine or whatever, and they just were like, hey, I'm fine, I don't have any symptoms, I don't need to do anything. And then I know we played this clip before, it's like you watch the clip and they show that
some sheriffs and people in hazmat suits showed up at their house and basically said, like, you're being forced to be quarantined. And they said that he was violating Kentucky law under the Louisville Metro Public Health and Wellness has the authority to issue an order of isolation. So think about that. Those kinds of things are already in the books. And so, yeah, this guy was a prisoner of his own home.
Yeah, this is, you know, these are the difficult situations, right? Because I don't know if, you know, everybody wants to think that if something was so contagious that a person would be responsible and stay home, but then they get drummed up in a fear frenzy. And so they have to, you know, make sure that that person stays home. And I guess that person didn't stay home, you know? So I don't know. Where does a group have the right to protect itself? I don't know. These are the difficult questions, you know, that all these stories are full of, and they're shaping society. Every one of these conclusions we quickly jump to and yell at someone else on Face World about or something, you know, does a point, say there's three of us here and someone, you know, runs in with something that threatens all of our life. Do we collectively have the right? I mean, we have the power. And I think that's, you know, there's natural rights. So, you know, I do think that there's a right to it. At that point, we can step up and stop them from abusing the people here of, you know.
The danger is that these people have control of the media and are issuing bulletins saying people who question COVID lockdowns are potential violent terrorists. You know, that we're at that level now, right? And so while
how are we going to build like, that better without calling people terrorists?
Like we feel like, and I think most people would agree, they have the natural right to defend themselves. And if somebody is literally trying to say, hey, you can't even leave your own house if you don't, you know, do what we say, whether that's take a test, take a vaccine, jump through a hoop, do whatever. I mean, at that point, you are a prisoner. And if somebody says, I'm going to defend myself and try to change the situation for the better, they would be called a terrorist.
One of the problems with it, if you think about rights, though, is yeah, we come together and like, my right to play my, like, say you and I were just roommates, my right to, you know, come in whenever I want, banging a skillet as loud as I can and playing a tuba and eating all the cookies, that one especially, eating all the cookies, we'll kind of get in your way and we'd have some problems. But, you know, we're not, how do we put it? So in exchange for me giving up some of my natural right to come in, eat all the cookies, play a tuba, and bang a skillet, we come up with some community rights, right? Like, I'll have the benefit of this whole house and only pay half the bill. And that's how it's supposed to be when we come together, ideally, theoretically, when we come together to be a city, a state, a nation, or whatever, is we're supposed to give up certain natural rights, like we're supposed to give up certain natural rights in exchange for civil rights, in exchange for certain things. But there's key natural rights, like our right to life, that once the state turns against, even the theory itself, the most social contract theories at this point say, well, the state's given up its one thing it had. Like, that's the one thing we get from it, is protection of our property and protection of our life. And, you know, but once we don't have that anymore, whose side is that state on? Is it on our side? And that's kind of all these stories lead to that and make people who have been taught that the collective and that the state is the answer, make people question what is the proper role of it? Because, you know, I feel like this whole absolute, oh, there's no role for it. Well, even if we don't call it a state anymore, we're going to group do things, you know, even if it's just you and I as roommates, we're going to come to some group agreements. So yep. Until there is no state, we need to have these conversations so people can learn about their enlightened self-interest and the role the state's supposed to have at best in their life and how it falls short of the mark.
Gotcha. Well, it's an important conversation to have. And if people don't think about that role, then it's going to make up the role for them. Let's go ahead now and jump to another COVID story. I thought this was interesting. And just again, this is like, think about this. This is real life now. Last year they were dropping that seed, planting that seed, the new normal, the new normal, the new normal. Now I've been seeing in recent weeks, Micah, people using the hashtag on Twitter and elsewhere, just showing examples of how the quote new normal is affecting their life, like saying, hey, I can't go home to Germany to see my family because I refuse to get this shot, new normal. I can no longer eat indoors in restaurants in France, new normal. You know, just like the realities that are already hitting us. And here's another one. This is from The Guardian. It says, confusion reigns in UK music due to vaccine passports and event insurance. Boris Johnson's statement that a double vaccine dose would be required to enter music venues is in doubt, and criticism is mounting around insurance for COVID cancellations. So the UK live music industry is still full of uncertainty due to a lack of clarification from the government about vaccine passports and an events insurance scheme that's been described by some concert promoters as unfit for purpose. Boris Johnson said that by the end of September, only those who have been double vaccinated would be allowed to enter clubs and other venues where large crowds gathered. However, those working in live music have not received confirmation of the plans. And on Sunday, a letter leaked to the Telegraph written on behalf of the health secretary confirmed that, quote, no final policy decision has yet been taken on the issue. So while they're just talking about it publicly, it seems like there might be some issues behind the scenes. And it says Julian Knight, chair of the Digital Culture, Media and Sports Select Committee, told The Guardian he wasn't aware of any imminent U-turn on the vaccine passport plan. Quote, I think in these circumstances, it's best for venues to prepare for their introduction as the cost of not doing so could be terminal. Think about that. It could be terminal for businesses who choose not to participate. And we go on now to another man who kind of has an opposite opinion. He says,
It's terminal because they learned last time when everybody just obediently shut down. You see what I mean? Like,
yeah, exactly. They've already set the precedent. They know people will go along with it. Although I will say, you know, somewhat unrelated, but equal, you know, it's an example that in New York, apparently, and apparently some places in France, some business owners are choosing not to participate and like still accepting people with or without the vaccine passports, but they're facing fines. So we'll see what happens. They got one more quote here I'll mention. Steve Sire, vice president, general manager of the O2 Arena in London, said he'd be surprised to see the vaccination or no entry rule come into play because, quote, it goes against everything the government have talked about in terms of ensuring that any mitigations are fairly applied and don't discriminate one group or the other. Michael Kill with the Nighttime Industries Association says that strict entry measures could reduce spontaneous customers, cause enforcement problems, and put venues at a competitive disadvantage. And he also said mandatory vaccines for events could be counterproductive. Quote, contrary to popular belief, much of our core market and workforce will not accept being coerced into taking the vaccine. The workforce is shrinking and illegal events are being organized today in light of the impending restrictions. I think that's interesting too, that there still will be, maybe raves will go back underground, you know, venues, speakeasies, parties and things like that. But both of us are, you know, enjoyers of music, but also have booked and promoted shows together and separately and really involved in the community scene. I know a lot of our listeners are also musicians and some of them still trying to figure out how to play live gigs. So this whole thing in the UK and coming to other places is going to affect a lot of people, not just those who want to enjoy music, but those who try to make a living.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Across the board, like you said, not just the musicians, but the sound people, the venues, the bouncers, the ticket takers, etc. I think it's interesting also that the UK had equality beforehand as far as not discriminating against anybody with whatever policies they put into place. And, you know, there's a lot of argument that people say it's not discrimination if it's a choice. Well, religion's a choice, isn't it? So, all right. Am I alone on here? Derek's gone away. I can't change the articles. People, can you hear me? Am I alone on here? Derek will be back, I'm sure. So, yeah, that's sad. We saw Live Nation. We talked about that last episode. We talked about Live Nation doing similar work here in the U.S. as far as requiring vaccine passports at live music events. So,
I think it will be a boon though for underground music, man.
I've been thinking about that for a minute because I tell you what, every show I've gone to that's been an underground show has been popping off. And I tell you what, a few venues even that have gone ahead and been pretty open have been packed like I ain't seen since maybe 20 years. So I don't know if it's just because of, what is it? We're talking about supply being pent up, right? Pent up supply for live music and people want that. So I don't know, maybe the real rock and roll, the real creativity is going to assert itself no matter what and find a way to thrive. So yeah, I tried to stop the music before. They always want to stop the music.
I don't think they can, but yeah. So we'll see how that plays out. I mean, we're going to go into a couple more stories now about the COVID passports. It's affecting the music. It's affecting people's livelihood. We're going to talk about how something we've been warning about since last year, that now people are being denied entry into the supermarkets in France without, and we have video evidence showing them checking people's passports to get into the grocery store, and the people who don't have them are denied entry. Before we get to that, though, here's another requirement that we might see pop up in the near future. It's popping up in at least one apartment complex in Alberta, Canada. Apartment owners in Red Deer want tenants to prove they are vaccinated. The landlords feel it's a reasonable request to ensure the health of other residents. And it says apartment owners Betty and Terry Welty want tenants to get their shots to keep their building healthy. They said they think it's reasonable to protect their health and the health of their tenants. And it says we're a non-smoking adult building, and Terry thinks that because he owns the building, we can set our own the rules. I have an autoimmune deficiency, and we're just trying to be careful. The couple sent a notice to their tenants on just recently, earlier this month, asking them to voluntarily provide records showing that they've been vaccinated. They acknowledge the legality of requiring tenants to be vaccinated is a legal gray area, but they still are going for it. And it says, quote, of course, at this time, we have questionable authority to make this request and are acting as other governments and businesses are doing throughout the world. In essence, limiting access to our suites only to those who have been vaccinated. What do you think, Micah?
Well, you said it, legal gray area. You know, people care about the law till they don't. And, you know, during this, just like during war, and this has been likened to a war forever, people love to push into that gray area to do things because what? They can do what they haven't done before, because you can't ever let a crisis go to waste.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of not wasting happen right over the last year and a half. Here's another one, right? I just talked about Alberta, Canada. Well, in Quebec, and I think other parts of Canada, I can't remember if it's, I don't think it's nationwide yet, but there's parts of Canada that are bringing in the vaccine passports. This was from just a couple days ago. The government recently announced the introduction of COVID vaccine passports will be implemented on September 1st, 2021. This is coming from a medical news website. We previously wrote regarding increased talks of proof of vaccination programs and privacy considerations they raise for businesses. And Quebec Health Minister Christian Dubé laid out the details of the province's vaccination passport plan, which is expected to apply to certain non-essential activities, namely gyms, bars, restaurants, festivals, and event venues across the state, the province. Where this says the vaccination passport will be implemented in gyms, team sports, bars, restaurants, as well as low to moderate or low risk events such as festivals and major events at sports stadiums. And for the time being, look at that. That's like they straight up say that for the time being, the vaccination passport will not be required. Oops, lost my point. That will not be required for access in retail stores or schools. But discussions are still ongoing as to whether religious gatherings and weddings will be included as events that require vaccine passports. The vaccine passport will be displayed as an individualized QR code on a free smartphone app or on a paper copy for individuals who do not have smartphones. A separate free app for reading the QR codes will be available for businesses to download. And it goes on.
It'd be easier for them if I just had a little telescreen right here that they could just scan the QR code off my brain.
Well, they could just implant it in your brain. I mean, that'd save us all a lot of time. You know, once we all get in line and we're having to scan our QR codes and our passports
unscannable
everywhere, it's going to become like, we're going to, oh my God, is this guy, he's still got the old model. Yeah, he's using a phone. Dude, just get the brain chip. You're wasting all of our time. You know,
those people won't be allowed in anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Then it's going to come to that. Then you won't have. Oh, all right. Well, let's go internationally, Micah. Well, I guess we were international. We were just in Canada. But what's happening elsewhere? Some of the hardest hit places have been Australia. And I don't mean hardest hit with COVID. I mean, very minimal cases in New Zealand and Australia, but locking down entire countries for one case, for five cases, for 10 cases, and people getting sick of it. I mean, people are getting sick of it in parts of Australia. I'm sure there's some folks who aren't sick of it. They embrace it. They love it. They think it's to keep them good and safe and healthy. But there are others who are starting to protest. Let's see if I can pull it up. Starting to protest in Australia, Melbourne, and other places. And it's starting to escalate. You know, whether for good or for worse, some people are starting to really want to put the pressure, the heat, the punches, the pepper spray on the cops and really push back. Because, you know, we were talking about this just a couple minutes ago, right, Mike? I mean, if they start locking you in your homes in Australia, they're putting people, they're fining people if they go out, they're jailing people. They just recently put in jail a protest organizer. I don't even have that story pulled up yet. But this dude, he was just an organizer of some of the recent protests, and he got 8 months in prison now for organizing an illegal demonstration. So when you're faced with these kinds of circumstances, you might think you need to take things into your own hands. And
would you do that and organize a protest in Australia from, say, I don't know, Saigon?
You could try to get away. Hundreds of arrests made this weekend as police clash with thousands of anti-lockdown protesters in Australia, as we are being told COVID cases hit a new high. And this is 1,000 people in Brisbane. And again, this is happening in many other places. I'm going to show on screen now. For those who are watching, we'll show you just the scene. So you can see just people battling the cops in the streets. Police chasing after people, people fighting with them. And it's just a chaotic scene.
That's not socially distancing, those. Those cops are getting awful close to those people.
They definitely are. Look, this one's Melbourne. I mean, it's happening. So I just want to acknowledge, I think we've done a reasonable job of acknowledging this stuff, Mike, and talking about all the different protests that have been happening around the world that a lot of media have been just straight up ignoring. But it's just important, I think, to really touch on that and to get people to see what is really happening here, because I just have trouble thinking that it's going to go away, Micah. And when we're talking about putting ankle monitors on kids and putting ankle monitors on people because they can't go outside their home, and you're talking about fining people like in Australia, and you're jailing people for organizing protests, and you're saying anybody who opposes restrictions or lockdowns is a terrorist, I don't know what's going to give. You know, it feels like somebody wants things to...
What about the people that are drumming up the fear? Why aren't they the terrorists?
So check out this video, Mike. I'm going to play this. There's no sound for it, but for those who can see, this is video outside of a grocery supermarket in France that is checking people's QR code, vaccine passport, sanitizer. Checking the... Le antepass sanitaire. And so people are filming, showing, I think these are kind of the protesters on the left side of the screen. And it just seems like they're just telling her, like, get out of here, you know, you don't have your passport. But I'll show the video. These are all the people lined up to get in the grocery.
Wow. There's some interesting things going on. It's interesting to see around the world, and we've covered this on past episodes, people getting out and actually expressing themselves about this. We've seen it in the U.S. I've seen a lot of stories now where just protests in general are kind of, I guess because of Portland kind of being shown in a bad light in the U.S. But I don't think that should deter people from, getting out there and talking to people, or, you know, don't approach anyone that doesn't seem approachable. Don't, you know, get in their comfort zone, I think, which is now, 6 feet or something. Interesting. Well, hopefully Derek will be back in a moment. We can talk more about protests around the world and what's happening and what might be accomplished by these, you know, letting people know that everybody isn't just to go along with it. I don't know. That could be a valuable thing, right? I mean, that alone. I don't know. I want to talk to Derek also about what maybe we should do in the light of this, because that has to be discussed as well. A lot of people, you know, they know what they want, they know what they don't want, but they don't even, you know, really have much of a path towards it. And I think individually we tend to talk a lot about, you know, making sure you're ready and making sure your family is as taken care of as possible, but I don't know that there is, you know, ideas beyond that as far as what we could do about, you know, what we're being kind of more or less forced through. So, hey, Derek's back. All right. Welcome back. We talked a lot about it while you were there. And if there's more, we should probably get into it. But I think
all it shows is people lined up outside the supermarket trying to get inside and them checking their QR code. So, I mean, you guys can imagine what that looks like. My point in wanting to show it is that, look, you ankle monitors on kids, putting people in their homes, fining people for going outside, arresting people for organizing protests. checking people's QR code status, vaccine status to get in the grocery store. These are the things I hope people are really taking seriously.
Yeah, I think, you know, we talked a little while back about the boost to the food stamps, and you might not think that's related, but when you think about it, you know, more money for the grocers, for the big grocers is basically what it is. And if they are going to support things like this, maybe now, like we were saying before, for other reasons, maybe now is more of a time to support people, one, that don't, and then two, things that are closer to just independent people doing things like farmers markets or, you know, roadside vendors or whatever it takes. You know, if they don't want you, why do you want them? I mean, I get it when you have to eat and you can't buy or sell without this. I see we have this comment here from Steven Shaff. I live in an apartment and can't grow food. What am I supposed to do? Can at least prep, of course, but can multiply my food or water. I guess he could grow microgreens a little bit just for, you know, some fast growing extra food. All right. Yeah, the ability to have land is important. You can container garden a little bit. As far as you'd be amazed how much a tomato plants, how much chard, you know, and different lettuces can produce when you keep clipping them and harvesting a little bit of them. And I do think that's something. It's a start. You can start learning about the plants. You can start learning about taking care of them. It doesn't take a lot to take care of them. Some of them, you know, take more care than others. But at the same time, creating or taking care of a life form that's making the earth more beautiful, cleaning the air, that sort of thing. So although you might not have a farm, you can do a few things without owning your own land. All righty. So we got an FDA story. Let's get into this. I thought, looking at what's going on, being, you know, rightfully concerned about what's going on, it seems like, you know, maybe we should start looking into pharma and the FDA a bit. So I found this story out there from The Conversation, and I do want to get into it a little bit. I kind of wish we could pull it up on the screen, but in the interim, the story is called, Why is the FDA Funded in Part by the Companies It Regulates? The Food and Drug Administration has moved from an entirely taxpayer-funded entity to one increasingly funded by user fees paid by the manufacturers that are being regulated. That's interesting. The people who they're monitoring are paying for their existence. Interesting. Today, close to 45% of its budget comes from user fees that companies pay when they apply for approval of a medical device or a drug. I didn't know that. But it turns out that wasn't always the case. In fact, Americans in the early 20th century were outraged when they found out that manufacturers used poor quality methods for producing food and medication. And that's kind of what led to the Food and Drug and Cosmetic Act of 38, which gave the taxpayer-funded FDA new authority to protect the U.S. consumer. One of the FDA's most shining successes occurred in late 50s when the agency refused to approve thalidomide. By 1960, 46 countries allowed pregnant women to use thalidomide to treat morning sickness, but the FDA refused on the grounds that their studies were insufficient to demonstrate safety. Debilitating birth defects resulted from thalidomide, which began to arise in Europe and elsewhere in 61. President JFK heralded the FDA in 62 for its stance. An FDA driven by the data, not corporate pressure, prevented a major tragedy. So I think that's, you know, kind of the concern with it being driven by the people that it's supposed to monitor, right? I got an idea. We can't trust people, so let's put people in charge of them and have the people we can't trust pay for the people in charge. It turns out that the FDA continued its work fully funded by the U.S. taxpayers for many years until the model was upended by a new infectious disease. The first U.S. case of HIV occurred in 1981. Blindness, dementia, severe respiratory diseases, and rare cancers were devastating complications from HIV/AIDS, and they appeared to be spreading rapidly. Well-known sports stars and celebrities were dying of AIDS-related complications. AIDS activists were incensed by long delays in getting experimental HIV drugs studied and approved by the FDA. Turned out in 92, in response to, this situation, Congress passed the Prescription Drug User Fee Act. was signed into law by George Herbert Walker Bush. With the act, the FDA moved from a fully taxpayer-funded entity to one funded through tax dollars and new prescription drug user fees. Manufacturers pay these fees when submitting applications to the FDA for drug review and annual user fees based on the number of approved drugs they have on the market. However, it is a very complex formula with waivers, refunds, exemptions based on category of drugs being approved and the total number of drugs any manufacturer might have. Over time, other user fees for generic over-the-counter biosimilar animal and animal generic drugs, as well as the medical devices, were created. As time passed, the FDA's funding has increased from the industries that it regulates. Of the FDA's total $5.9 billion budget, 45% comes from user fees, but 65% of the funding from human drug regulatory activities are derived from user fees. These user fee programs must be reauthorized every 5 years by Congress, and the current agreement remains in effect through September 2022. There's some argument that these fees have worked well, et cetera. Most recently, the COVID-19 pandemic has seen the FDA provide emergency use authorization for potential treatments in the matter of weeks, not months. The infrastructure and capacity to review the available information so rapidly is due in large part from the funding from user fees. So that's one of the arguments that this article makes for how this is good, because, you know, it's increased funding. Before the user fee was approved, 21% of medications were removed or had new black box warnings as compared to 27% afterwards. Some potential reasons that more adverse effects are coming to light after drug approval include senior FDA officials overturning scientists' recommendations. A lower burden of proof that's required now. More clinical data and new drug applications coming from foreign clinical trial sites that require additional time to assess in an environment where regulators are rushing to meet tight deadlines. However, without critical consideration of what is being negotiated, the FDA can become weak and ineffective, unable to protect the citizens from the next thalidomide. There are some signs that the pendulum may be swinging too far in the direction of the manufacturers. And, they provide some links as to that. So I
didn't know those details either, Mike, because some of the things you're pointing out there as far as the fees and just how involved that. I mean, obviously, I know the FDA is corrupt, a captured agency like most of the federal government, but I didn't know that specific detail.
Yeah, I think that maybe these are some of the things that, you know, the climate, what's going on. Now's the time to dig into big pharma, regulatory agencies, not just here, but throughout the world. Corruption within these agencies. How do they get paid? How well do executives in this alphabet soup called the FDA do? And, you know, we talked a few years back about, you know, the FDA being headed by a former head of Monsanto. Who heads it now? What kind of job did he have beforehand?
I was saying probably another big pharma rep. With COVID specifically, we've seen all the different people who were involved in the COVID recovery working for the vaccine manufacturers, working for the companies. A lot of the people that Trump put in his Operation Warp Speed that he put together. I want to just share a real quick tweet that I put out earlier this week that relates to the FDA in the sense that you just talked about, Micah. I just asked, should FDA approval mean anything to you? Obviously, talking about the COVID shot. The FDA, much like the FCC, EPA, CDC, Fed, et cetera, are captured agencies. And I put a link to the Harvard School of Ethics report called Captured Agency, how the FCC is dominated by the industries it presumably regulates. And it reminded me of what you were just reading there in that article as far as them setting the rules and everything. And so, I mean, I don't know why any kind of informed person would feel like they have a good reason to trust these institutions. I also got your other one pulled up here if you want to get into this too. We'll be winding down, guys, in just a few moments. We'll end with some music tonight. Of course, we do this every Wednesday, Freethinker Radio, uncensored news, underground music. You can check us out at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. I'm going to pull up this other FDA one, Micah, while we're...
Yeah, I don't know that there's so much in there, but it is it's basically a scientist, Dr. David Graham, who's associate director of the FDA's Office of Drug Safety, that makes an argument for why the FDA, is basically incapable of protecting U.S. citizens. And I didn't get too much into this one. I had it there, for we could get into if we wanted to. But I also, you know, we had some other news, and I know we're winding down, but I do think it's, this is the type of stuff I think we need to start getting into to be able to talk about this stuff, to know the history. Turns out that Dr. David Graham is a scientist at the FDA, says that 2,000 less than the estimated U.S. citizens he believes have died from the effects of the arthritis drug Vioxx. So it just keeps going between 99 and 2004. An estimated 20 million Americans took this drug, and 80 million worldwide. This man was the recipient of the 2005 Cliff Robertson Sentinel Award, the recent 16th annual ACF Fraud Conference and Exhibition. He says, we've estimated that up to 140,000 patients who took Vioxx suffered heart attacks. Of the number, 60,000 died, almost half. It turns out that this Graham, associate director at the Food and Drug Administration's Office of Drug Safety, and a former an employee of the agency for more than two decades, says this is a poster child, Vioxx, so for what's wrong with the FDA and why I believe the FDA reform is so urgently needed. You know, he goes a little bit more into it, and I think it's interesting because he says that he remains at the FDA, but says that he has been marginalized by FDA management and not asked to participate in the evaluation of any new drug safety issues. So he's ostracized for standing up and saying, look, we're not doing our job. And because I was trying to figure out why he said it. But he says, you know, it's incapable of protecting Americans against another Vioxx. And that we're, and think about what Vioxx was. It was a product of a drug company, Merck company. Yeah. So,
yeah, yeah. Well, we will include that link along with all the others on the archive on the HoustonFreethinkers.com. Definitely another interesting angle. Micah, I think we should at least hit this one here that you brought up about the budget, this big budget to just pass through. I mean, I don't know if it's the latest, biggest budget ever or whatever, but it's the Biden administration. And I thought it was interesting because the article you pulled up, the National Review, which takes a more conservative slant, you know, mentioned Build Back Better. But I'll show you after we hear your thoughts. I pulled it up in Biden administration's own words, you know, using Build Back Better agenda, just like the World Economic Forum Great Reset language. But what is this all about, this $3.5 trillion budget?
Well, anybody that's paid attention to this show for some time knows we have to talk about what they take your money for or what they water down your money for. So, of course, we had to cover something this big, trillions of dollars. The budget resolution looks to make massive investments in climate, healthcare, families, and infrastructure, and jobs. It would create a universal pre-K for, think about that, for three-year-olds to start dealing with the state. Three. We're not five, ain't old, young enough anymore. So you're going to have universal pre-K for 3 and 4 year olds, and make community college free for 2 years, according to a summary of the budget resolution. So, you know, there's that. The measure also adds new dental, vision, and hearing benefits to Medicare, calls for a formation of the Civilian Climate Corps, kind of like a Marine Corps, only Civilian Climate Corps, and would invest significant funds into affordable housing. Biden added, because, you know, you won't have a job, Biden added that the vote would allow the House to consider his, quote, Build Back Better agenda. And he said a broad framework to make housing more affordable, bring down the cost of prescription drugs by giving Medicare the power to negotiate lower prices for drugs, and to make elder care more affordable. Biden said the plan would provide clean energy tax credits and continue to give the middle-class families the well-deserved tax cut for daycare and health care they deserve. So it's going to continue to give you your daycare tax cut and your health care tax cut instead of taxing you there. But I don't know, you know, it's one of these things where instead of drone bombing the heck out of people, if some of these things were paid for, it might be a better use of watering down and forcibly taking other people's money. You know, at least it would go to make some people's lives better rather than just ending lives. But at the same time, what's the proper role of government? Is it a proper role of government to provide daycare? Is it a proper role of government to, monitor the, create jobs? Is it? I don't know. Some people would say yes. So each one of these times, every time they take some money to spend some money, all those things pop up because the people that get this money are, you know, not you and I. We'll get our $600 stimulus. But no, they're huge corporations and banks. Like even the PPP loan, where'd you have to get it from? You didn't just apply to the government. No, you had to get it from a bank, getting a bank to make interest on, you know, your need. And, you know, when you start talking about universal pre-K for 3 and 4 year olds and free community college, who's going to let go of those things? You know what I'm saying? And no, most people aren't going to see these as bad because they help people. And, you know, as long as it helps someone, that seems to be making it better, building it back.
And then the other thing is that they create the inequalities, or they feed into them. They, you know, their systems that these folks have put themselves in charge of produces that. And then, yeah, when somebody's like, hey, I'm in a bad situation, I need some help. Like, even if we don't think it's the role of government, people are in a position where they feel like they don't have other choices, or they got a boot on their neck or whatever, or, you know, they're taught like, hey, this, the government's just here to take care of you. And all it does is just kind of keep feeding into the whole, it all just keeps spiraling. I'm showing on screen for those.
And it feeds into the divide as people like rush to the money trough. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons.
Let me just show this real quick, Mike. This is from the House Committee. This is a government website, budget.house.gov, published just over a week ago about the 2022 budget resolution and reconciliation, how we build back better. And that term is used several times throughout here. And it's just the same things you were just highlighting: child care, education, Green New Deal, tackling climate crisis, all this stuff that a lot of people are probably going to see as good, but it's definitely going to be, you know, they're trying to tout this as like, this is Biden's, you know, New Deal, or this is like growing the government. And it's like a new progressive era where the government's, you know, showing the role of government is to help out society and to, you know, be that parent figure. Whereas you said, like, some people want that, I guess. Others of us are like, what the heck is going on? And yeah, another giant budget. I'm sure there'll be another massive military budget not shortly behind it.
I don't know what's next. Regulating the masks for the 3-year-olds and the, you know, I mean, I think that's it's a lot. There's a lot going on. I saw another thing, you know, obviously the dollars slip in real quick. I'd like to hit that the second largest U.S. mortgage lender will now accept payment in Bitcoin. So that United Wholesale Mortgage. And last episode, we covered how a major software vendor will be accepting payment in gold. So, you know, there's two more things that you don't need a paper, you know, piece of toilet paper to buy.
Yeah, it's definitely cool to see different options happening. I know people have all kinds of opinions about crypto, but hey, if you can, I see people in my circles using it for positive reasons and taking advantage of some of the new tools that are emerging while also being skeptical of different things that are rolling out, because part of the Build Back Better agenda is a push for a cashless society, which COVID has sort of promoted the idea that cash is dirty. Oh, we're running out of coins, you know, just use card when you can, or we'll just go digital. Now that they got you on a little digital QR code for your Vax passport, it's not that hard to just say, hey, we're going to plug in your Fed coins to those and your everything else. And you're just going to have this one, you know, ID that eventually might become a wearable device or something implantable. These are all things that have been discussed, not my ideas, but that's the world of their future. I want to share a couple comments. I saw Michelle Renee say, I think the Great Reset is happening regardless of any pushback. And if it doesn't happen fast enough for them, Klaus Schwab says a devastating cyber attack that makes the pandemic look like nothing is coming. And if that doesn't work, Bill Gates can always just block the sun and create a climate disaster. They need to save us, and they're willing to destroy us in order to make sure they can play the role of savior. Remember, the people who funded the lab that released the virus are the same. Interesting comment, and I don't see any lies.
Yeah, for sure. It's been an interesting show so far. And I do think the people always engaging in the comments and such have been a big part of our show from the inception. So we get a lot of diverse comments there. And it's very important because this is one of the ways in which ideas are hatched out here. I also see here we got Jeannie Owen Miller saying, break out those gold bars. Well, you know, this software company, they said what they buy, like $10 million worth of gold, setting some of their money aside. So, you know, people sometimes forget that money is a store of value and not just a liquid thing, and that you always stay in debt. You know, they may want us all to stay in debt forever, but maybe every once in a while it's good to have, you know, next week's food money or whatever it might be.
Just to be prepared. Well, guys, we're going to leave it there. We do this every Wednesday, Freethinker Radio. Sometimes two of us, sometimes our buddy Johnny joins us. You can find us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. You can find our archives there. You can find us on the Conscious Resistance. If you're at Spotify, on Spotify, you can find Freethinker Radio and find all of our archives there. It's 10 years we've been doing this, and we hope to do it for another 10, trying to bring you important information you won't find elsewhere and underground music. Anything else, man?
For sure. We love all y'all being out there caring about this show, caring about the ideas, agreeing, disagreeing with us. That doesn't matter. Just caring about the issues and really caring about it and trying to get to the heart of it is what it's all about. Thanks for all the support and thanks for caring about the world.
Cool. I'm actually going to end with one of my songs, Reflection. Mike, I don't know if I told you this, but I'm going into the studio on Monday here in Mexico to record my first mixtape, which is going to be like 4 songs, and excited to do that. So check this out, guys. See you next week.
We have to reestablish our identity.
33.
We have to understand who we are and where we fit in the natural order of the world.
It's time to reflect.
The people who have created this system and they perpetuate this system, they are out of balance.
So let's do this.
They have made us out of balance.
I woke up this morning feeling I had something to say. I got doubts on my mind. It's time to let them fly away. It's time to unlearn poison and heal broken hearts. Go back to the end. It's time for a fresh start. This is the place we can atone for our sins. This is the place where our hero's journey begins. A space between love and hate, where there's no escape from our fate. Rather than be irate, let's create, let's build. The better world we know is possible. I've got no fear, cause we can overcome any obstacle. I stare all my demons in the face, I'll show you what's possible. I send love from my heart, I'm intuitive, not illogical. It's just that lately I've been searching for deeper meaning. I'm sick of drugs, booze, mindless sex, and criminal scheming. Feels like I should have more at this point in time. I'm talking knowledge, not money. I'm trying to feed my mind.
See, we are power. They deal in violence and repression. We are power. They tell us, they want us to believe that we are powerless.
I hope you hear these words from my mind, from my heart, to your ears. Let's make a difference. Let's do something. Open up all 3 of my eyes and fly to the heavens. During my meditation, I see my life in chapters of 7. I connect to my inner child to heal my wounds. I remember those I've lost to dope, gone too soon. My life flashes before me, a collage of joy and pain. I recall the highs, the lows, I swear I'm going insane. I'm trying to wrap my mind around this journey. Spent too much time worrying about things that don't concern me. No more time wasted, not chasing my dreams. I wake up every day knowing this world ain't what it seems. We gotta find our own path, we gotta make our own meaning. Cause we can't be sure,
we might be dreaming.
All I know is, when I look in your eyes, I see myself. I'm just a reflection of your impression of my higher self. Could it be that our whole reason for being, our existence, is a lesson to teach us over and over until we get this? You are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free. Shake off your chains, you are blind, but now you see. Grandfather, help us remember where we come from. Grandmother, walk with us until this battle is won. Just here to remind you to give thanks where you come from. Think about where you're headed. 33, out.
We are a natural part of the earth. We are an extension of that natural energy which is spirit and which is power. That is natural power. And just as it takes millions and billions of elements to make a blizzard to happen or to make the earthquake, to make the earth to move, then it's going to take millions and billions of us. We are power. We have that power.
You are powerful, you are beautiful, you are free.